All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we are both on spring break, finally, free from school. And so, what better thing to do than talk NBA basketball? And there's a ton to talk about. So, let's just jump right into it as per usual. And let's start by talking about Ja Morant, who's been in the news not for very good reasons as of late. There's been a lot of craziness, a lot of stories that have come out about him engaging in some pretty borderline criminal acts, I want to say. So, Hunter, you kind of want to recap what has been going on with Ja Morant and give
Yes.
your general thoughts.
So just we'll be clear, we don't know exactly what happened, how much of it is true. I want to give as much benefit as possible here to Ja Morant because really I do hope this stuff isn't true, or at least most of it. So I'll start with like some of the lighter stuff that happened and move on to the progressively bigger stuff. So one of the first things we found out, this is the most recent report, I believe, was that Ja Morant and some of his friends intimidated a security guard for a mall, and he felt
Is it not the funniest story ever?
yeah, like this guy with $200 million is walking into a mall and trying to like be gangster and threaten this guy. Like I don't know like what happened, but I mean the real news of it is the fact of the matter is that the security officer felt threatened enough to have to file a police report, which was very serious. We don't know if like a gun was flashed or there could have been some m more insightful violence. We're not sure what that could have entailed. The other news, there's two more things. The first one is after a game between the Grizzlies and the Pacers, in which it was a pretty hard-fought game. One of Ja Morant's friends was escorted out of the game for yelling at players, stepping on the court, some other things, and he was found or he was spotted after the game about 30 feet from the Pacers bus yelling at players and trying to get them to fight him. Supposedly Ja Morant was also in the car with this guy, and as they drove by, a red laser was flashed at a security officer again,
It's
which the officer said he was 100% a gun. So that in itself is pretty loaded. But this is probably the worst of everything. We found out some news about this earlier, I think in the off season. There was some small reporting on basically Ja Morant and a 17-year-old guy playing ba pickup basketball at his house, getting into a heated exchange in which there was a physical altercation. That's all we found out. Nothing really came out of it. But now we're finding out that Ja Morant, he does say he did swing first. That's true. And he threw reportedly 13 or 12 to 13 punches to the guy while he was still on the ground, and then came back and again flashed a gun at the 17-year-old. So the flashing the gun thing, right, I think is right now just like kind of hearsay. Like I don't know if we know that's true, but
Every story involving Ja Morant, he does some crazy act and then flash the gun just to be safe.
but I mean that's really is the recurring theme here. So there have been a lot of talk about it. I think that Shannon Sharp has had the best advice for Ja Morant, and it's just like, look, man, you've made all this money, you know, you get to this point, and there's a new type of aspect, outlook, and reality you have to have on life with certain responsibilities, the amount of money, the amount of fame that you have. And it's like Ja Morant's running backwards. He's trying to be gangster coming from a place where he wasn't when he started, you know, like when you escape that, you're trying to leave this, you know, this crime, this gang activity, make money and escape that. And it seems like Ja Morant is making the money and then he's committing the activity. Now he's a big shot. So it, you know, I'm not going to sit here and bash Ja Morant all day, but hopefully he understands how serious this is and that he doesn't get like suspended or from the league, or at, even worse, like an actual crime is committed and he has to serve time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with that is, like, look, John Morant, I think he really is obsessed with kind of cultivating this image of being someone who is kind of like hard, like from the streets, doesn't play around, tough, all these things. But the problem is like that's going to come at the expense of all of the things he's worked so hard to achieve, you know, his shoe deal with Nike, his brand deal with Powerade, like all these massive lucrative sponsorships, his $200 or $200 million extension with the Grizzlies, you know, he's putting that all in jeopardy to sort of chase this image. That's really not true to himself, if you just look at his background and his upbringing. And I just don't see the point in it. You know, it just seems like, what do you gain from going to the mall and pressing some guy with your entourage and stuff like that? Or what do you gain from beating some kid in basketball? Or like, what do you gain from the whole laser pointer incident with the Pacers? You know, you literally could just keep your head down, play basketball for a living, make hundreds of millions of dollars, and set your family up for generational wealth. Like, it just completely unnecessary. And I think it just comes down to this idea of wanting to be something that you're not. And I think we can all kind of relate to that to a certain extent. We've all been there. But I think Josh should realize that there's bigger things at stake here than just like, I don't know, a slap on the wrist. Because as you said, like if char the serious charges come in, then that's when he starts to lose the endorsements. That's when, you know, teams start looking to part ways and stuff like that. Just look at Miles Bridges, right? As an example of what can go wrong. You know, you do a really horrible act. Obviously everything is still sort of being processed right now, but like let's assume that he actually did those things. He was a guy who was a borderline all-star who was going to get hundreds of millions of dollars in contract money, who was like really just one of the brightest young players in this league. And now he's not even in the league. He's undergoing legal troubles, and his life just kind of took a complete 180 and a big turn for the worst. So nothing is guaranteed, and you got to treat each day that you are able to play basketball at a superstar level. You know, never take it for granted. And so I just don't like what I'm seeing out of Ja. It really hurts to see one of the brightest young stars fall into this trap. But I really hope he's able to find some better mentors and people surrounding him who can tell him and steer him in a better path, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just wishing the best for him and also the people who could be his victims if it is the case that these things are true. I think we can move on from that. There's been a lot of talk about that.
Sure.
So let's get to the more positive news in Kevin Durant having his debut game, in which I don't know the exact numbers, but he shot 10 for 15 from the field. I remember that. I think like 25 points in 26 minutes or something like that. He had a great game. Good Suns win. Devin Booker had a great game as well. And Chris Paul, he had like 2 points, but I remember seeing he had like 11 or 12 assists. So he also had a pretty solid game. So what do you see out of his debut? And does this seem like the seamless transition that we thought the Mavs might have been?
I mean, yeah, like you look at this and Booker and KD really just fit together like a glove. Booker 37, KD 23. I mean, KD, like he obviously was not getting big minutes and he did look like he was knocking a little bit of rust off, but the fit there was really, really clear and they played off each other really well. There was this play that KD had, you know, like a full court pass to D Book, and it just looked like they had already been playing together the whole season. But I think that's just the type of player KD is. You know, you could put him with pretty much anybody in this league, and it's going to be a match made in heaven. And so I think I might have underestimated this Suns team a little bit. I still think they have the potential to collapse in the playoffs just because of CP3's history and just the issues that I think they came into the season with Ayton, with obviously CP3's regression, with Booker's, you know, tensions within the team. I think those still could come to a head and like kind of make this team internally combust in the playoffs. But I think in terms of the fit with KD, it's a about as good as you could have asked for, you know? Like that debut for him really could not have gone any better.
Yeah.
Especially considering the Mavs, who we're going to talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, I think also having him come back against the Hornets was a good decision. I believe it was the Hornets, right?
Yeah, it was the
Yeah,
Hornets.
so having him come back against a team where defense is not going to be an issue is definitely a positive. So I want to see what he looks like against a real contender, against a real threat to their team.
Yeah.
I want to
Because,
see what they look like under pressure.
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I guess since like we're talking about him right now, this is a LaMelo Ball-less Charlotte Hornets team. So not really the cream of the crop they were going up against. And I guess we could talk about that right now real quick. So LaMelo Ball is out for the season after suffering that ankle injury. And so this means that LaMelo is out for the season, Lonzo's out for the season. I mean, LiAngelo obviously has had his kind
Out
of
for the
troubles.
season.
He's been out for many seasons, but he's ha been having his trouble trying to break into the league. Obviously, been in and out of the Charlotte Hornets roster. But what do you think about just like the Ball family in general? Like, I guess, do you see them having like a impact on this league, or do you think that injuries are going to play a big role? Like, I don't know. Just give me your overall thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, for sure that LaMelo has had a few minor injuries. They could be overplaying this injury just to, go in for the Wemby sweepstakes. But we'll see, because obviously we know what Lonzo's injury history is like. And I don't think we've talked about this on the pod, but I know there have been studies that the NBA analysts have talked about that show that young children and just people in general who specialize in a sport from a young age are like something like 100 times more likely to suffer injury playing a sport. So at the professional level, that's magnified even more. And when you look at the Ball family, this is a family that specialized in basketball from the time they were like, what, 3 years old? Like, they've always been playing basketball. Lonzo Ball has talked about this a lot, that every single day they would run 2, 3 miles on concrete, like, so these sorts of things that really damage and destroy your legs. Like, Lonzo's talked about how his shoe line really was a detriment to his feet, and that they weren't ready for him to wear, and that they'd blow out every single quarter. And no, LaMelo hasn't had those issues. But the fact that they both, and also Jello, specialized in a sport from a young age and just kept playing it, and I mean, probably more extreme than anybody in the world, like, just kept playing from such a young age up until the professional level. I mean, if not like more than anyone, then like equal with everybody else. That's why where I think the injuries really come in.
And honestly, that actually is a great point because I was reading a couple articles on the NBA executives talking about why players seem to be getting injured more and more nowadays. You look back in the 1980s, the 1990s, players like Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, these kind of guys were just playing every single game pretty much. Everybody was pretty much an Iron Man. John Stockton, Karl Malone, like these guys were playing all the time, basically playing full seasons. And you look at it as kind of an enigma because the medical technology has advanced so much, modern medicine, especially in sports medicine, to the point where players can play for much longer in their careers. And you would think that that would lead to greater longevity in like being able to play more games each season, but that just really hasn't been the case. And one of these executives was talking about how, the extensive AAU circuit and the fact that players are just like getting drilled so much when they're younger means they're basically coming into the NBA with their bodies already broken. And so as a result, teams have to sort of rely on measures like load management and taking it easy and not really practicing as hard, all of which sort of leads to one, players sitting out more, and two, players getting injured more. And so it's kind of just a negative cycle all around that perpetuates itself, because young players, they see their AAU stars, Jalen Green, LaMelo Ball, these kind of guys like having their flashy highlights in the league. They go enter into these AAU circuits and summer leagues and stuff like that. Then they sort of accumulate the wear and tear over the years, come into the league, and then the cycle basically continues. So I don't really know how to fix it, but it is a very serious problem and it is leading to a sort of degradation of the NBA as a product for fans.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure there's anything you could do about it. And I also think that something that people fail to mention when it comes to this is in the 80s, 90s, before then, players played in college for multiple years. So not only did you have, less AAU seasons, less specialization at a younger age, but you played shorter seasons in your early 20s, late teens. you developed your body in a setting that wasn't as strenuous, and then you came into the league at 21, 22 years old when you were more developed. That was the typical route for most players coming in from like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You think of MJ, Dominique Wilkins, guys you mentioned, guys who were Iron Men, did play a long time in college. And that has to also play some part of it. And I think another aspect is NBA players today are more athletic, more explosive, and faster. Just like the average NBA player is faster, stronger. People like to think about the eras in the past as the stronger, harder eras, which is true. But players are more skilled. And something that I find really interesting is the average height of a player has gone down by, I think, 1 inch since the 90s, but the average weight of a guy who is 6'4" has increased by 15 pounds, and the average weight of a guy who is 6'11" has decreased by 15 pounds. So what that means is guys are coming in like when they're shorter but a lot stronger, and guys who are taller are a lot skinnier and skilled, which is leading to players getting injured more, especially the big guys.
Yeah, I think players nowadays, on average, are stronger than they were like 20, 30 years ago. I mean, just our knowledge of how the human body works, how fitness works, muscle building, all these things has improved so much to the point where we're able to sort of cultivate the kind of body you would have like at your prime at like a 29, 30, when players are basically coming into the league at 20, 21. You know, you see players nowadays, it seems more common than ever to hear about guys in the drafts coming in NBA ready. You know, their body's already built for the NBA. Whereas before, you know, players would be kind of projects that you would have to sort of build up over time. But I mean, if we were are cool to move on, I want to talk about LeBron James because he is out for 3 weeks with an injury. And so I before we talk about what this means for the Lakers, I was wondering if you think that like this is kind of father time winning over LeBron now, not in the sense where he is ever going to sort of fall off a cliff and just be completely washed up, like we've seen with other players, like I don't know, Dwight Howard. I don't know why I singled them out specifically, but like, you know, we've seen this happen where father time catches up to players and they're just not the same anymore. But for LeBron, he's just too skilled, too talented to where that's never going to happen. But where age catches up to him is that, you know, these injuries start to accumulate more and more and they're more frequent and he's not able to play that many games in the regular season. And his body is just simply not built to play an 82 game regular season.
Yeah, I think LeBron just has a slow decline, is going to be a very slow decline over his career. And maybe one day that'll fall off a cliff. But for now, I think it's just kind of the tic-tac, 3 week, 1 month kind of injuries. And that's going to happen every season, especially when LeBron is playing physical, tough basketball games or points in the season where he is like really desperate to try and get to the playoffs. Like right now, you're going to. And if you're going to get LeBron trying it, like let's say 90%, there's a pretty high risk for injury if he's diving, if he's doing these things that you'd expect somebody who's 26 to do, not 38. And yeah, what if you call that quote unquote father time winning out? Sure. I have another question for you. You brought this up to me a little while back when you found out this injury occurred. Do you put any blame for LeBron's struggles with his feet, his ankles, on Solomon Hill? Who, if you don't remember, for those of you listening, was the one who I think it was the year after the bubble,
Yep,
fell on
2021.
LeBron. Yeah, he fell on LeBron's ankle, and that was the start of LeBron's injury history in his feet since then.
I don't know. I mean, if you want to blame him in terms of like, is that probably where these issues with his ankles started? Yeah, then that's probably the moment. But I don't really hold any blame against Solomon Hill because I don't think it was intentional. I think it was a legitimate play on the ball. I don't think players are that malicious, especially in just like a average regular season game, to go out of their way to intentionally injure a player like that. I think that, you know, things happen in a basketball game. Anybody who has ever played basketball knows this. Sometimes players get hurt and it's nobody's fault. It's just what happens. And so it's an unfortunate series of events. If it wasn't Solomon Hill, it might have been somebody else, or LeBron, you know, might have like tweaked his ankle just on a routine layup. We see how that happens. Even with a guy like D'Angelo Russell, like he literally hurt his ankle inbounding the ball. Like things happen in basketball. And so I don't think, especially for an injury like this, you could lay the blame at anybody's feet. So I don't
I agree.
hold any contempt against Solomon Hill. But speaking more broadly about what this means for the Lakers, who are desperately trying to fight for the play-in slash playoff picture right now, what do you think this means? I mean, what have you seen from the Lakers thus far, ever since they have made those trades to bring in D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, and Malik Beasley? And yeah, I mean, just what do you think about the Lakers' prospects of making the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, maybe a little biased as a Laker fan, but I'm gonna do my best to be objective here. I think we've seen a lot of positives, especially out of a guy like Jared Vanderbilt, shown to be a good energy guy. And yes, he's had his down games, but I think that's gonna be continuity without LeBron James. I think Vanderbilt is really gonna thrive in minutes with LeBron. LeBron thrives off of guys like that, and it's not quite as good of a fit with Anthony Davis, especially when D'Angelo Russell isn't playing. Because then he really has no facilitator outside of Dennis Schroeder, who doesn't really fit his style. And that's just what you're going to get. I'm really hoping that this reliance on Anthony Davis isn't going to lead to too much wear on his body, because we know that he's not somebody who can sustain dominance for long periods of time. Obviously, he's sitting out, or he sat out the previous game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But the Lakers have won, I believe, four of their last five. They won three out of four on the road, and they came back from a 27-point lead by the Dallas Mavericks, and they won that game. So I think the Lakers have showed a lot of promise this season. Their initial goal of getting to the sixth seed, I don't know if that's possible without LeBron, but they have a very easy schedule, and with how tight the West is, it wouldn't shock me if they got there, but I don't think that's likely. I think the Lakers are going to end up being a play-in team.
Yeah, I think that's really like what they should be aiming for right now, especially without LeBron James. But I agree with you, Hunter. I mean, we haven't talked about the Lakers ever since they've made this deal, but I've been very impressed with how they've looked thus far. I mean, 4 out of 5 wins against some decent opponents. I mean, the Pelicans, even missing Zion, is still a playoff team. And then obviously beating the Mavericks with Kyrie and Luka. And putting a good fight up against the Grizzlies without LeBron on the road, and then winning against OKC last night. Didn't have Shea, but Lakers didn't have AD and LeBron. So I think what we're seeing with this team is like, a renewed energy, something reignited within this team. As they realize that the playoffs and the play-in, they're within reach right now, and things can happen there. Once you actually make it to that point, anything is possible. So I've really liked what I've seen from guys like Jared Vanderbilt. I think his defense really can alter games. I loved the way he was guarding Luka Doncic in that game against the Mavericks. I think that, the way he was able to limit him, force him to make bad shots or just to give up the ball was something the Lakers have really desperately needed in a long time and haven't had for a while. And
Yeah,
guys
it's.
like Malik, or sorry, go
Oh,
ahead.
I was just going to add to your comment about Vanderbilt. He wasn't just guarding Luka Doncic. He was guarding Brandon Ingram. He was guarding Ja Morant. He guarded every single team's best player. And not only did he guard their best player, but all three are very different types of players. Obviously, Ja Morant is going to attack the basket. He's going to facilitate. He's going to run around screens. Brandon Ingram, he is going to, shoot over the top of you, also run around screens, have the ball in his hands a lot. And Luka is going to facilitate and shoot threes. These are all very three drastically different types of players. And he was able to hold his own against all three of them. And I think that's because he hasn't been really utilized as the perimeter defender in his career. In Minnesota and in Utah, they used him as an interior defender. And I think these perimeter guys aren't used to playing against a guy of his caliber, not like how good he's at defense, but how long he is, how mobile he is. And he is also has a low center of gravity, so he can stay low on the ground with you and jump up higher than you can.
Yeah, no, I think he's a very versatile defender, and that's what makes him so valuable to this Lakers team. But I also want to give credit to what's his name? Malik Beasley. Sorry, I totally blanked for a sec. But Malik Beasley, the Lakers, one of their biggest struggles over the past 5, maybe even 10 years has just been their shooting. Lakers have always struggled to find those consistent shooters who can knock down the three ball. And I think Malik Beasley while he sort of started off cold on in his debut for the purple and gold, I think that he's really stepped up. And now with him knocking down shots, that creates gravity and attention to allow other shooters like Troy Brown to knock down shots. And so it just has this cascading effect that really helps the Lakers, improve as a 3-point shooting team. And then other guys I want to just give quick mentions to. Austin Reaves has been playing incredible during this stretch. And I also like what I've seen out of Mo Bamba and Rui Hachimura, who, Rui's been on the team for a little bit, but they're just quality guys who can fill in the gaps and fit this team's more defensive identity, because I think this team at its core is focused on getting stops and making plays in transition, stuff like that. So happy with that. I want to see more out of D'Lo. It sucks that he got hurt, but I think he's going to fit great. And yeah, I think that the
Hopefully he
Lakers are
plays
going to end
tonight.
up,
We're hoping.
hope so. I think they actually already ruled him out against
No,
against Minnesota.
they have him as of right now. He's still out as of yesterday. They haven't updated his report.
Yeah, I think they're playing it more safe than anything with D'Angelo Russell, because he's going to be an important piece if the Lakers make the play in. And that's, I ultimately think, where they're going to end up is going to be around that eighth seed, especially considering LeBron's going to be out for 3 weeks. But I think that's enough Lakers talk. We could sit here and talk about the Lakers all podcast. But
Yeah, but
there's,
let's talk about the Mavs, because that's
for
a
sure.
team the Lakers, or they struggled against the Lakers in that second half of that game. But I do want to first compliment the Mavericks in on their win last night. That was the first time that a duo of Mavericks had scored 40 points in a game together. Kyrie and KD each got 40. They were both red hot from the field. Outside of that game, though, they lost every single game they played together so far. So I, again, giving them credit for that win. This is kind of what we expected. We expected the offense to look great. And also, like, we expected the defense just isn't there. We expected that offense was going to be good enough to just for the defense to not matter, but that obviously hasn't been the case in a lot of these games. So I want to know what your thoughts are and how the Mavs can fix this, or what you've seen out of them.
I mean, I think their defense is just, they're going to have to accept their defense is going to be bad and there's going to be holes there. And I think the Mavs game plan, the way they're going to win games, is just by, having their two flamethrowers take over and having this just fireball offense dominate you, and there's nothing you can do about it, because those are the types of players that they have on this team. Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic are both liable to just score from anywhere on the court, score in any way that they please, and just get a shot off whenever, wherever. So I think they need to rely on those two guys to get buckets and to outscore their opponents. And I think Luka, is so good at getting his teammates involved that he can get other players on the team, great looks. Reggie Bullock, Tim Hardaway Jr., even Maxi Kleber, who can square up from three. I think that this team is never going to be a good defensive team with the way it's currently constructed. Obviously, losing their best overall defender in Dorian Finney-Smith was going to like kind of seal their fate like that. But they don't have a great defensive big. Christian Wood is obviously much more of an offensively oriented kind of guy, and they don't have a good rim protector like that. JaVale McGee is just not that guy anymore. Talk about father time catching up to a player. But I think that this Mavs team can only work if this offense is clicking like we saw last night. Obviously, they don't have to score 40 each game, but there's been some hiccups along the way as Kyrie and Luka have tried figuring out how to play next to each other. But I think as this team continues to play, I think they're going to figure it out more and more. And I must say, I am incredibly excited for this game on Sunday up against the Phoenix Suns. Kyrie going up against
Yes.
KD, and obviously the history between these two teams, it's going to be an electric game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a great game. And I did want to quickly mention that the teams they've lost to have been the Kings, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, the Lakers, and the Pacers. The only team, oh, sorry, they have two wins together. They beat the Spurs, which I'm not sure I count that as a win, and they beat the 76ers. So that 76ers one was that game where they were both red hot. And hopefully they can stay that way and they just get hot at the right time. You know, sometimes playoff success is being hot at the right time.
Definitely. And I mean, what do you think, Hunter? Do you think that I mean, obviously we were both pretty big, I think, on the Mavs after they made this deal. Does this make you less optimistic about their chances at the title this season? Do you view them as a team that could legitimately make the finals, or do you think their holes on defense are too big for anything to really come of this
Well,
postseason?
the thing is, I'm not going to be so reactionary to the start of how they've looked right now. Because if you remember last year, the Mavericks had just as poor of defense. Yes, they had Dorian Finney-Smith, but the way they won games in the postseason was like that Houston, those Houston Rockets teams in like 2017, 2018. They made like 33s a game, and you're just like, how the hell do we stop them? So if they can still do that, then they have a good shot of beating anyone.
Yeah, I think that this is a team that's pretty much liable to lose to anybody, but can also beat anybody depending on the given day. And I think that makes them a really scary team. I don't think any team wants to see them in the playoffs, but also, that means that if they end up, I don't know, as a three seed, however unlikely that it is, any team below them could pretty much have a realistic chance of beating them. So, Mavs definitely like. I'm also not going to be too judgmental as it is pretty early. And who knows if Katie and Kyrie really start figuring this out, this could be a team
KD
where
and
we change
Kyrie.
the tune very. Sorry, Luka, and I'm so used to saying
Yeah,
them.
KD and Kyrie just flows. It
I
flows,
know,
man.
man. Sucks that they don't play together anymore. But if Luka and Kyrie are able to figure this out quick, then we're going to be talking very differently about the Dallas Mavericks soon.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to move on to talking about another guard in the West. It's crazy to talk about Kyrie Irving as a guard in the West, isn't it? But
Yeah.
Damian Lillard scored 71 points. I just wanted to bring that out there. He did it. This is the most efficient 71-point game ever. Most efficient 70-point game. I'll pull up the stats in a second, but
I think
just
he
what were
was the
your initial?
first to do it in under 40 minutes.
Yeah, under 40 minutes and incredible efficiency.
Yeah, I think it was like maybe it was like 70% from the field.
Yeah, so 13 threes, 71 points. It's just absolutely incredible. And it was a 22 of 38. Just an incredible performance. What did you think of this one, Hunter? And how does this compare to the other 71-point game we've had this season with Donovan Mitchell?
For me, it's really hard. Like, I'm not going to try and compare them and say whose was better than the other. But when you look at this game, obviously the most efficient 70-point game in this ever. I mean, if it was going to be anyone, it was going to be Dame. I mean, Dame is just that guy. If he's knocking it down, there's nothing you can do. He was pulling it from half court with 18 seconds left on the clock in the second quarter, and I loved every second of it. I didn't get to catch the first play of the play through the game because they're playing against the Houston Rockets, and sorry, Houston fans, nobody wants to watch Houston basketball. So I did not tune in for the game, but I saw at halftime. I was like, wow, Dame has, I forget, I think it was like 30 something, maybe it's 38 points, and I was like, okay, I gotta, or it was
41 and
41.
eight threes at half.
Yeah, it was that. That was what it was. And I was like, okay, I gotta tune into this. So I saw the second half, and it was really incredible to watch. I will say it did come against the Houston Rockets. And they didn't need every single one of his points. Whereas in the Donovan Mitchell game, that was against a contender. I forget who was it against the Sixers or.
No, I think the Donovan Mitchell game was against the Bulls. It was against the Bulls.
Okay, it was against the Bulls, but they needed every single one of his points. He almost had a triple double. He had a game tying shot, things like that. And I'm not saying that his was more impressive because Donovan took way longer to get there. But it's really hard for me. Like if Dame had this performance in a game against like let's say the Nuggets, I'd give it to him.
I mean, he did have a game comparable to that in the playoffs against the Nuggets. I mean,
This is
just
true.
pull up Damian Lillard 2021 playoffs. Like, that is one of the greatest playoff performances that I've ever seen. Just clutch shot after clutch shot, like impossible kind of difficulty on some of these threes. I just think Damian Lillard is that type of player. And I think when it's all said and done, Damian Lillard is a guy we're going to be talking about in the same sort of vein as maybe like a Tracy McGrady, a Carmelo Anthony, guys who never won rings but are all-time greats, phenomenal scorers, incredible shooters, and
I
guys who
really
need
hope
to
he gets
give their
help.
flowers. I mean, yeah, it's so sad to see. He's dropping 71 points because he needed to. This was a team that was struggling against the Houston Rockets and is
I don't know. They
currently.
were up by like 15 by the end of the game. He was by the end, he wanted that 14th, 15th three. He wanted to beat
No,
Clay's
but I'm
record.
saying
He was chucking
when
them up.
there it was still a competitive game by halftime and he had 41 points and 8 threes. Like it wasn't like he, it was a blah and he just kept piling on. Yeah, toward the end, they were starting to come away with the game and he was sort of adding a little bit of icing on the cake. But this was a performance that was pretty much needed. And he sort of stressed that after the game. He said, like, we're battling for the play-in. I know I've got to do all I can. But it's sad that he has to do all this in order to scrape by. This is a team that's not fighting for a championship. This is a team that's fighting for the play-in tournament. It might not even make it. It's very questionable. And so I really hope to see Damian Lillard get some help. I don't know. I think he's going to stay in Portland his entire career and more power to him. I just wish that the front office could put one last trade together, bring in a disgruntled star and just see what he can do.
Yep, LaMelo Ball, get on over there.
I don't,
That
I
would be
do not
horrible.
like that. I hate that
I
so much.
know. That would be horrible.
I'm thinking Embiid and Dame.
That's disgusting. But I want to move on. Let's talk about some news that we kind of covered a little bit last week, but it's now official. Quinn Snyder is now the coach of the Atlanta Hawks. He was signed to a 5-year deal. He was previously an assistant coach there, so he knows their system. I think he was there in like 2014, 2015, like those years where they had like Kyle Korver, Al Horford, those Jeff Teague, those years where they were winning. That's a big deal though for a guy who was out of a job, a 5-year deal for somebody who has never been a head coach for an organization. And they're winless since the takeover. To be fair, I think it's like one or two games,
Yeah,
but
it was just one game.
okay, it was one game.
Yeah.
To me, this is like what we talked about. It's like it's not a coaching issue. Like Nate McMillan very well could have stayed there, and I don't think anything would be different. Maybe like a change of scenery as far as a coach, like in a guy like Quinn Snyder versus Nate McMillan, is going to change the dynamic between Trae Young and how he feels about his organization. But I think that's really
Yeah.
all it does.
I mean, Trae Young, he's a guy I'm very, very low on at the moment. I just hit the season he's been having. And just like talk around the league is that this is maybe not a guy that you can win with. Maybe there's too many problems with him as a defensive liability. Maybe he's too inefficient. Maybe his style of basketball just isn't that conducive towards winning a championship. And that 2021 run was kind of a fluke. I mean, that's looking more and more true. And I don't think that this Quinn Snyder move is really shifting the needle or anything. This Hawks team, in my opinion, is one of the clearest like just sweeps I've ever seen. Like I think this team, if they play the Bucks in the first round as that A seed, which is what it's kind of currently looking like because they're going to be in the play-in, probably going to win that game, play the Bucks in the first round, that's a sweep. That's a sweep, and I don't think it's going to be very close. And I think that the Hawks are really going to have to do a lot of soul searching over the summer to see how to change the identity of this team because. I'm not trying to be too like overly dramatic, but there's nothing really about this team that makes me excited about it. And I don't think Trae Young is really the kind of guy that you can win a championship with. Do
Okay,
you agree with me there or?
I not as your number one. I would agree with that, but I want to do a quick little segment right here. I want to name a few teams right now that are in the play-in or above in the Eastern Conference, and you tell me if you think the Hawks could beat them in a 7-game series.
Okay, sure.
All right, Brooklyn Nets.
Yes, I think
Wow,
if the conditions were right. Okay, I know I was just
You're
shitting
that
on the
low on the
Hawks a lot.
Hawks. You're that low on the Hawks. Like
No, I
you
think
don't
they
think they
can.
could beat Brooklyn?
No,
You're
I think
saying
they could
barely.
beat
You're like
Brooklyn.
barely. So okay, what do you think the seeding
Yeah,
is?
okay.
Or
What I
sorry,
think the
not
seeding
seeding, but
is?
how sorry, not the seeding, but how many games do you think the Hawks win and how many games do you think that
I think
the
that's a close series. That's like six or
Wow.
seven. Because I
Okay.
think this Brooklyn Nets team, I think people got to give them a little more credit. There's a lot of young hoopers on that team. Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson. I think Mikal Bridges really is a standout guy there. He's really been thriving as a kind of number one option in Brooklyn. And I think that's a team that really doesn't have a lot to lose. And so I think those kinds of teams are especially dangerous in playoff settings because When you just play loose, you just play free basketball, that can work for a while. We saw that with the Utah Jazz to start the season. And so I think this Hawks team would kind of crumble. I don't think they're mentally the toughest team. And I think that there's a ton of talent on the Brooklyn Nets that could just catch fire at any moment. So I think the Brooklyn Nets probably don't win that one, but it would be very close.
New York Knicks.
No, I think the Knicks are a solid team. I think that this time around, this is a series I would want to see. Obviously that rematch from 2021, but I think the Knicks this year around, they're led by a bona fide star in Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle, obviously another star caliber player. Both those guys have been really spearheading this team. We've obviously seen to start the year past the All-Star break. This is a team that's been on fire. Adding Josh Hart was a slam dunk move. He's fitting like a glove. And it's really just helped them on all aspects, from defense to rebounding. And I think there's a lot of talented young guys on this team, from Mitchell Robinson, Quentin Grimes, even Jericho Sims gives you good production. So I like the Knicks, and I think that at this moment they're a much better team
All
than
right,
the
last
Hawks.
team I got for you, Washington Wizards.
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, they actually Hawks just played the Wizards and they lost to the Wizards. So I'm gonna. Obviously, one regular season game is truly the greatest indicator of playoff expectations. So I'm going to say the Wizards win that one. But also, I also just think that the Wizards, I like their core slightly more than the Hawks. I do think Kuzma has been having a very underrated season. Not a lot of people have been talking about him. Porzingis has found some new life in Washington. And obviously, Beal is a bona fide star at scoring the ball. So I like the Wizards.
I honestly
Over
take
the
the Wizards in
Hawks.
six in that one.
Yeah, I think I would take the Wizards there too.
All right, I think we
But
can move
yeah.
on to talking about the next little news segment, which is the Milwaukee Bucks are now on a 16-game winning streak. This has come in some
Ooh-wee.
games I
Ooh-wee.
believe without Giannis as well,
Yep.
where he has been injured. He originally had the wrist injury at the break, and then he got a knee injury. I forget against who. But they're just not catching a break, and they're still making do. They're still winning games, and they're not winning games. I mean, right now they have a lighter bit of the schedule, but they're still beating
I
tough
mean,
teams. They beat Boston, they beat the Clippers, they beat Miami, they beat Phoenix. They've had some tough games in there, and they've still been winning.
yeah, I mean, Bucks are really catching fire at the perfect moment. It seems like all the pieces are really clicking again. Giannis is arguably the best player in the world right now again. Julius, or sorry, Jrue Holiday, he is like legitimately playing at an all-star level. I mean, we talked about him as being a questionable pick, but he's playing at an insanely high level on both ends of the floor. Chris Middleton still is sort of finding himself, still slow into it, but the fact that they're winning even without Chris Middleton at 100% is a scary sign for the rest of the league. Jay Crowder was a great signing. I mean, he's fit in very well on this team. No time to adjust whatsoever, and I think he was worth those 5 second round picks. And then just, the other guys around the sort of perimeter here, not literally, but on the periphery is what I meant to say. Brook Lopez, obviously, is in contention for Defensive Player of the Year. He's a huge part of why this team is so good. You look at guys like Pat Connaughton and Grayson Allen as just shooters who can really help you. And then guys off the bench like Bobby Portis and Javon Carter, so solid, bring so much energy and fight to this team. I think that. It's pretty much like looking like a lock that the Eastern Conference Finals is going to be a Celtics Bucks rematch. And I'm all for it. I think that would be a
Who do you think
phenomenal
wins?
series. I think that series, I think as of right now, I'm going to take the Bucks. I think that
I
just the
agree.
level that Giannis Antetokounmpo is playing at doesn't look like anybody in the world can stop him. And so, what do you think of the Bucks right now, Hunter?
They've been my favorite since the beginning of the season to go all the way.
Okay, so you think they're the championship
I had
favorite
them
right now?
since the be I had them since the start of the season to go all the way. I said if they're healthy, they probably would have been there last year.
Right.
So I'm taking them every time.
All right, I mean, fair enough. And I think that, 16 game winning streak is nothing to laugh at. And I think teams are starting to pay attention that the Bucks are really looking like they are becoming the favorite once again. And
Yeah, but
so.
it's been a quiet 16-game winning streak, though. Not a lot of people or analysts have been talking about that, which I've been surprised by.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't really caught too much media attention, but I think that's just kind of the nature of the Bucks. You know, they are a team that usually flies pretty under the radar. I mean, like, barely anybody talked about Jrue Holiday until he became an all-star, and he was having an incredible season. And I don't think I've seen a single article about Chris Middleton. So, in or about like his sort of ramping up and the fact that he hasn't fully been there yet. But yeah, I'm really liking the Bucks, and it's going to be an interesting sort of MVP vote at the end of the year. And so I actually want to talk to about that real quick, because there's been a lot of conversation just in the NBA, like media and in the NBA, just social media spaces, about the MVP and whether Nikola Jokic deserves to win three straight MVPs. So, I mean, the argument for Jokic is pretty straightforward. He's the best player on the best team in the West, putting up historic numbers. And he's kind of the sort of criteria for him to win MVP has sort of changed each year, right? So 2021, it was like, okay, he's putting up all these historic numbers. And then 2022, it's okay, he doesn't have any help and he's putting up these historic numbers. And now it's like he's putting up these historic numbers and he has all the help and he's on the best player on the best team. But I think there's been a lot of pushback against Jokic winning this MVP because, or maybe not even winning the MVP, but just talking about how the standards for him will be much higher, because we don't just give three straight MVPs to anybody. If you have three straight MVPs, you basically have to win a championship. You have to be making deep playoff runs. And if he doesn't, then our conversation about the type of player Nikola Jokic is going to have to change. I think that, you know, me personally, if Jokic doesn't even make the finals, I think this is going to be an enormous disappointment of a season. And I think that's going to make me change the way I talk about Nikola Jokic for a while, because, I mean, now there's no excuse anymore. Past 2 years, all right, we haven't been fully healthy. We've been relying on guys like Monte Morris and Will Barton in the playoffs. But now they're fully healthy and there really is no excuse. And so, Hunter, what are your thoughts on this general just sort of topic of discussion and like this whole MVP conversation? And if Jokic is not your guy to win MVP, who else might be?
Yeah, I'll start with talking about like the playoff basketball sort of deal. I know this might sound like a weird comparison, but I think Jokic and Steve Nash have a lot of similarities in the way that they dominate the basketball game. Obviously opposite sizes, but Steve Nash was all about finding his teammates, making the right read, making the right play, and affecting the game by making all of his teammates better and being able to knock down the three. That was, you know, the main gist of what he did, the 7 seconds or less offense the Suns ran.
Yep.
And then when you look at Jokic, it's very similar, you know, getting his teammates involved. It's how can we make the right read? And he shoots the three. He also can dominate in the paint as well, but he's always going to try to make the right play. And he's going to be really hard to stop in the playoffs, but can he dominate the game away a guy like Giannis is? No, he's not going to. It's going to be very different the way he dominates a game. So it's really hard for me to compare Giannis and Jokic, but when you look at like their like debates on like their third MVPs, I feel like there's been a lot more in favor of a guy like Jokic than Giannis. I feel like people have been making the argument in favor of Jokic more than they have of Giannis at that time, and I don't really see why, because the whole thing with Giannis is like, oh, it's just voter fatigue. When Giannis was still increasing his numbers, his stats were going up. Jokic, I mean, kind of in the same position right now.
Yeah. So wait, do you have Jokic winning MVP this year? Would you want to see him win, or would you want Giannis to take that?
No, I feel like I would want Jokic to win an MVP. Like, I'm not against him winning it. I'm also not against Giannis winning it. Like, right now, I could not pick an MVP. Like, the Everyone's been so good this year, it's like almost impossible to pick an MVP. It's we'll see what it comes down to, but I can't pick a
I
favorite
think,
right now. I really can't.
yeah.
But I would say I would not be upset with either of them or Joel Embiid winning it.
I mean, me personally, I think I was more in favor of Jokic winning earlier in the season, but I think Giannis has really made a late stage push to win this MVP. I mean, the 16 game win streak sort of speaks for itself, but also the fact that, our big like push for Jokic winning those other MVPs was the fact that his supporting cast wasn't fully healthy. Giannis has basically been doing this without his number two guy the whole year. And so I think that combined with the fact that he's the best player on the best team in the league right now, let alone like your conference in the league, sort of puts him slightly above Jokic for me. But what would you say is a disappointing season for Jokic? Like, what would his standard be for you if he won that third MVP?
He has to make it to the NBA Finals. Has to make it to the NBA Finals. Maybe we'll see what that looks like if he wins, but like he can't come short, especially losing before the Western Conference Finals. Like he has to get to the finals to me. Like if he gets to the Western Conference Finals and he's a three-time MVP in a row, I'm like, okay, you're in talks with Larry Bird and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Like that's your company, and those are guys who are four or five-time championship winners. Like that's who you're in conversations with, and you can't have zero rings.
Let alone
So,
not even make the finals.
right, exactly. Yeah. So I think if you're good with it, I think that might be a good place to wrap it up.
Definitely. Yeah, this was a
Yeah.
great episode. I hope if everyone else is on break as well, that you have a nice, restful spring break. I know I certainly will. I'm going to be in Florida. Going to
Me
be just,
too.
enjoying it by the beach. It's going to be nice. It's going to be a
Yes,
good
sir.
time. And so we will see you all next week. Hopefully, a lot more tan and well rested. And so, yeah, take care. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Goodbye.
Peace.